540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Cooper Lawrence. The Southeast is reeling in the aftermath of the devastation from Helene.
This is the worst natural disaster in our city's history.
The mayor of Augusta, Georgia, says the power lines are so severely damaged they won't have power back until at least Saturday. At least 100 people are dead in six states, millions without power, and hundreds still missing.
I'm Jason Allen in Cedar Key, Florida, where there's damage from one house to the next, and you will find this extending for hundreds of miles to the north. Heather Greenwood has lived on Cedar Key for the last 5 years and manages the town's bed and breakfast.
So many of these island people work so hard and they've just lost everything.
Touring this afternoon, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said the damage from Helene appears to be greater than the combined effects of Idalia and Hurricane Debbie in August.
Actor, singer, songwriter Kris Kristofferson has died.
On the Sunday morning sidewalk.
Best known for A Star is Born and Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, his music spanned decades. Kris Kristofferson was 88. In Lebanon, at least two people were killed in an Israeli strike on Beirut. CBS's Natalie Brand has more.
National Security Council's John Kirby says that Hezbollah's leadership structure being decimated works to the Israelis' advantage and is good for the region. U.S. officials tell CBS News that Hezbollah's missile capabilities have also been significantly degraded.
Around 45,000 dock workers could strike as early as Tuesday if a new contract deal isn't reached. CBS's Tim McNicholas has more.
A looming strike would mean the biggest disruption to the flow of goods in and out of the U.S. since the height of the pandemic, affecting building materials, fresh fruit, and more.
And this shelf could be empty, you're saying?
The bananas, yes.
New York City grocery store owner Abdul Jawad says his customers could notice changes within a week of the strike.
If it happens, how will that affect prices?
Well, prices will go higher without a doubt.
Former President Donald Trump launched new attacks on Vice President Kamala Harris at a rally in Erie, Pennsylvania.
What she's done is a total disqualifier. She should be disqualified. She should resign the vice presidency and go home to California.
Former Arizona Republican Senator Jeff Flake has also immigration on his mind and joins a growing number of Republicans endorsing Harris. He spoke about it on ABC's This Week.
One thing that she brings to the table is that she knows how to work on a bipartisan basis. And if we do immigration reform that endures, it's going to have to be bipartisan.
This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Music scene. This is Max Inc. Radio. We are local music.
All right, we are here. We are live in the lair on Max Inc. Radio, presented by the Aaron Weber Group. I'm Rocker here with Rob Roberts. Lake Waves Trio is a Madison-centric, groove-based outfit that creates celestial originals with an eclectic, progressive, soundscapey instrumentalism, and like their offbeat song titles allude to, the experimental music creates a fitting soundtrack to anything from bank robberies to impromptu dance parties. Led by Graham Marlowe, the synthesizer graffiti artist, the Lake Waves Trio is live in the lair. Graham Marlowe, Mason Amenstahl, and Will Bailey, welcome to Max Inc. Radio.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
All right. Hey, Lake Waves Trio played on State Street in Madison for the night market. And, you know, when you guys are downtown, what's your favorite restaurant to eat at before or after a show?
I don't know if I'd say anything specific, like, to the name, but I generally go for, like, Thai food, something spicy and nutrient-dense.
Nice. Is there Thai food down on State Street?
On the perimeter, at the very least.
Yeah. All right. I know there's one over on Willie, but I didn't know about State. We'll have to check it out. Graham Marlowe, the synthesizer graffiti artist from Pulaski, Wisconsin, how did you get involved in music? And tell us a little bit about your backstory.
Sure. Well, Pulaski was kind of like a Sherwood Anderson short story kind of place, you know, like 11 bars in a Catholic church, literally at one point. So
what a contrast.
Right. And so you, I don't know, you just start seeking new places and your imagination runs wild being in a place like that just because you're so removed from everything else. But I took piano lessons, like classical level in middle school. Didn't have the discipline in me until I got really out of high school. I was starting to turn into like a keyboardist in high school. I did the jazz ensembles. I did a lot of like experimentation in different styles and stuff.
Garage bands?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I was really more of a percussionist in the beginning. So I think that gave me a good baseline to kind of jump around. But keyboards have been primary since like 15, 16. And been more professional about it since my early 20s, I guess you could say.
And what role did your parents play with you, you know, getting into music? Were they involved in music?
To an extent, like my mom sang in church and stuff like that. I think that's as much as she had time for when she was raising us, but really beautiful voice. I always just kind of wish she had used it more. My dad was more of like, you know, the prog rock vein, jazz,
you oh, that's know, where he
experimentation, just like, kind of into bands that could go off the page and come back, but then also like really have a well-crafted song like Rush, you know, like the live show was a, you know, almost like a cartoon. So this, on top of that though, I had two brothers that were professional jazz musicians at one point. One was playing with like Miles Davis Electric Band alum, like in their college 5 o'clock band stuff, Clark Terry, and I had no idea who those guys were when I was younger, but I just kind of thought, oh, this is another concert of my oldest brother, and it's going to be good. I didn't really connect the dots.
It's going to be
good. I didn't connect the dots at the time, but yeah, it's really intimidating to think about in hindsight, but that gave me a good...
set the bar.
Yeah, like almost intimidatingly high, but brought some neat things out of me, I think.
Wow, that's pretty cool. And what synthesizer wizards did you listen to? Did you listen to any of the prog guys, you know, the solo guys like Jean-Michel Jarre? Who are you into? Who inspired you?
Yeah, yeah. That's one name I was going to mention, the Tangerine Dream guys. They've made brilliant albums up until recently, especially with like some German electronic producers that are more like up and coming that they've worked with, Ulrich Schnaus and those guys. I think that some of the guys that were sort of the, I don't know if I have the right noun per se, but just dipped me into some deeper waters, musically speaking, like Joe Zawinul, Chick Corea, anyone who was kind of on the edge of where like jazz and rock cross over into one another, and then you're into this kind of space, you're progressive, anything can happen kind of space, but like almost in a different planet, kind of floating in a way from the improvisation type of thing. So that's always something I've been kind of attracted to in general, you know, bands that could go off the page and come back, like had the skill to just kind of take risks and trust each other and, you know.
Now, Graham, you have a degree in music and English from St. Norbert College in De Pere, Wisconsin, and you studied with some great academics, including late jazz director Fred Sturm of Appleton's Lawrence University. Tell us about your college music life.
Yeah, I was in social groups and stuff, so I was out a lot, but I was also, you know, up practicing late most days, I would say, at the end of everything. So, like, I had an odd balance. But Fred Sturm was someone in the area that I had always wanted to learn more from. And, before, he was in the throes of like cancer and stuff, I had the privilege to kind of study with him a little bit, or at least like, do a form of ear training with him that I thought was really helpful and kind of like imagistic. For instance, one of the exercises that we would do, at his house was, we'd pick out a scene from a movie that either he really enjoyed or that I really enjoyed, and we'd splice out different kinds of music to get a different emotional response. And I always thought that was a really cool way to learn music too. It kind of puts you on high alert in a way as you cycle through things, but also just like paying attention to, oh, okay, so this is like more minor jazz, or this is more major and like bluegrassy or whatever it may be, classical.
But so you're kind of matching the emotion of what you were seeing in video and putting something to fill it in audio.
Almost like a text painting in a way, yeah. Or like a live painter would do in a sense. Mm.
That is very interesting. That's a really cool thing to hear. Well, let's get to some live music in the lair with Graham Marlowe's Lake Waves Trio, presented by the Aaron Weber Group. The first song you have for us tonight is called Dance Party in a Deserted Parking Lot. Tell us about this song before you play.
Well, Will and I were kind of a tweener act for a long time, but then sat in with groups, and he produced artists out here and such. But we got more serious with this project 3-4 years ago, as far as like tracking it, working the booking, connecting the dots with other like-minded artists, etc. Just kind of working all of that at once. And there was a previous bass player before Mason. He did the first like album and a quarter, more or less. He came from a more metal background. Can't really explain it, but it just sort of fit. We would just get into stuff and come back to it. And yeah, but I think Mason's more what the music always kind of wanted. As far as the title and that goes, I guess that's where I might be like going from errand to errand. I might be in those 4 minutes of my work at my break time at work where you get like this little, you know, flash of writing or whatever. And you can kind of capture the lightning in a bottle, if you will. But I think for a lot of what we do kind of falls into that territory of like jazz fusion. Like it could be the soundtrack for just about anything, but sometimes it just kind of makes sense. Like it's an Onion headline. It's like similar to something like that, you know,
but that's true.
Really takes you there before we start playing anything, in a way. Like you're laughing before we, you know, really
started playing a note yet. I know of a deserted parking lot, so I can see it right now. So you've already started the imagism.
It's just like it fits the whole like guerrilla marketing of what we do too a little bit. There's no other way for me to do it, I think, with this kind of music.
Nice. Well, let's hear it. This is go ahead and jump behind your boards here. We have, oh, by the way, we have a drum set, a bass, and this giant mass of like keyboard mountain over here that Graham's playing. So let's hear it right now. This is Dance Party in a Deserted Parking Lot. This is Graham Marlowe and Lake Waves Trio, Max Inc. Radio. We're live in the lair. Thank you.
Live in the lair, Graham Morrow's Lake Wave Trio. All this local stuff is brought to you by the Aaron Weber Group. First Weber, the most reliable name in real estate. Move to Madison.com. Rocker, I got to tell you, that was pretty amazing. just watching what's going on with all the keyboards. First of all, there's a mountain of keyboards. Okay, then you're tweaking all the keyboards and changing the sounds and just wow.
Yeah.
Just blown away.
That was pretty incredible, yeah. Huh? And the bass player, man, he just don't stop, man.
No, not at all. Like, not at all. And I want to mention here, I don't know, there's like 12 buttons down there. And lots of knobs.
I want to hear these guys do the Peanuts song.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking, man.
Yeah, right on.
Oh, man. Graham, you often play solo, but tonight you've brought in a band, and we'll get to know your band members individually, but what does performing as a trio add to your music? And I actually know, because we had you in the lair solo not too long ago, and it was very kind of mellow, but this is like, wow.
Yeah, I think the solo thing is naturally more ethereal. A lot of times I'm incorporating like found sounds or sampling myself on a different keyboard tone, like playing against that, or there's like an acoustic electric thing. But I always felt like Lake Waves Trio was kind of the full realization of my imagination, like kind of where the music was kind of meant to go. It's kind of like we kind of take hardware as far as it can without incorporating software, I feel, and I really take some pride in that, especially since there's a lot of the electronic music school of thought that I kind of operates around that, where it's like, you try to make the sounds like organically as best you can.
And yeah, you're really playing the sounds. You're changing the
shaping the things as I play
the sound, and then playing it on the keyboard, expressing it.
Yeah.
It's not just like a pre-programmed track, right, or loop or something.
I think that would, yeah, and I think that would make me feel a little bit naked. I don't feel naked in the solo sets, but like, you know, having to operate off of like samples and triggers only or primarily, I think, you know, that would kind of like pigeonhole myself almost. But it's just with this kind of rhythm section, like anything's possible. And I feel like every week that we meet, we kind of, you know, scratch at that a little bit somehow. Like,
yeah, because there's that, you know, element of psychedelia, that element of you know, just ambient, like new age music, yet, you know, it's over this like jazz rhythm, you know.
Yeah, and exactly. And,
you know, even maybe, I don't know, a little like boogie to it, or, you know, a little, I think that bass, that's what makes your butt want to shake to this, like almost like ambient music, right?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like Circles Around the Sun, or, you know, one of those like modern instrumental groups that kind of came out of the, you know, Grateful Dead family, if you will.
Yeah, like kind of a mellow Medeski, Martin and Wood, or
right. Yeah, they're a big inspiration on us. Just the possibilities that they, you know, kind of unlocked through their albums and their shows, and just the interest in vintage keyboards and vintage sounds and equipment and all that. Like, that was built into the mix there. So, yeah.
That's pretty cool. I'm glad to hear. Well, let's get back to live music in the lair with Graham Marlowe's Lake Waves Trio, presented by the Aaron Weber Group. The next song that you have for us tonight is called Punches Fly Over Prom Princess.
Uh-huh.
Tell us about this royal-induced brawl.
Well, we were at set break, more or less, at practice earlier in the year, and I was combing through what was supposed to be like, you know, synthwave, vaporwave, experimental electronic kind of artwork. I found a few people on Instagram, was trying to find, you know, some of the material they were quoting, like artists wise and aesthetically, and it just kind of stumbled upon it. But this photo came up. I don't even remember what I had in the search bar, but it was basically like throwing punches at prom, more or less. And then, you know, I got what I asked for in the search bar, because like one of the headlines that came up was like Punches Fly Over Prom Princess. And then I looked at, you know, the date on it. It was like Cincinnati, Ohio, October 81. I'm like, this kind of takes me somewhere, like, and we could kind of fit the bill on this. And like, combing through, we track right to tape in practice a lot, just to make sure we capture or remember, you know, come back to things. And that was just one of those things where it was just pretty fully composed as a first take thing, and that title just kind of fit it so well, because it was and it's kind of like the Flaming Lips, you know, their song titles are bonkers, but it's like you don't really know how serious to take it until you're to the end. We're like, wow, that was really cool.
Yeah.
You know?
So, well, Frank Zappa was a guy who had some pretty bonkers sounds like that. And then you'd listen to the Frank Zappa music, and it was, you know, very intellectual, you know. Yeah. Whereas maybe some people at the time were, you know, parents were like, oh, who is that guy? But it was pretty high-level music, very similar to this. In fact, when you guys were warming up, I was like, what, is Frank Zappa's backup band, like, playing or what?
For sure.
Well, let's hear it. This song is Punches Fly Over from Princess. From prom Princess. I can't get it right, guys. Oh, here we go. This is Graham Marlowe and Lake Waves Trio here on Max Sync Radio. You're listening to Live in the Lair.
The Graham Marho Lake Wave Trio on Mags Inc. Radio's Live in the Lair, brought to you by the Aaron Weber Group, powered by First Weber. Learn more at movetomadison.com.
We'll be right back after this break.
Brandy, cow chips, and great local music. This is Max Inc. Radio. We are local music.
For the record, good sir, are you saying people that buy or sell with the Aaron Weber Group get the best price with updated market reports and instant property value quotes?
I am, Senator. They also do virtual or in-person meetings, too.
You expect us to believe that the Aaron Weber Group, powered by First Weber, is Madison's go-to real estate expert with results?
Yes.
Order! That's the Aaron Weber Group. MoveToMadison.com. Order in the court.
Visit Full Mile Beer Company and Kitchen in downtown Sun Prairie today. Come for the homemade food and beer and stay for the live entertainment. 132 Market Street in Sun Prairie. See the full menu and upcoming events at FullMileBeerCompany.com.
Tons of glass artists share the same passion for eye-catching art as Ignite Glass and Gifts, so we're showcasing their work alongside our talented local artists and our in-house Ignite artists. The latest techniques, the hottest colors, and mind-blowing designs are here for you to enjoy. Madison's favorite for glass, gifts, and vape, Ignite Glass and Gifts. Monona Drive, Williamson Street, and Odana Road. Plus, IgniteGlassandGifts.com. Do your eyes a favor and see this stuff.
Are you looking to kick up your nighttime entertainment? Good times await you at the Lazy Wolf Lounge, Madison's east side place for friends and family to meet for fun and food. Test your knowledge with Monday trivia. Let your inner rock star out with Thursday karaoke, plus live music, and meet all your friends at the Lazy Wolf for the big game. The Lazy Wolf Lounge, 1617 North Stoughton Road in Madison. Follow them on Facebook or at LazyWolfLounge.com.
You found Wisconsin's local music authority. This is Max Inc. Radio. We are local music.
The Graham Morrow Lake Wave Trio is on Max Inc. Radio's Live in the Lair, brought to you by the Aaron Weber Group, powered by First Weber. Learn more at movetomadison.com. Rocker, wow, what a journey so far.
Wow. It's been a quick half an hour, too. We've only had two songs.
That's very true. It's very true.
But this is just some really good prog, jazz, rock. I don't even know what to call it. It's just a fusion of all different kinds of things and a mountain of keyboards, a drum set, and a bass guitar. A five-string bass guitar at that, Rob.
Oh, you know, that last song, Punches Fly Over Prom Princesses, I could see it. I absolutely, you sit back, you listen to the tune, you absolutely make the connection in your head. You can.
Well, let's get back to Graham Marlow here. We're going to talk about your song titles a little more. Dance Party in a Deserted Parking Lot so far. Punches Fly Over Prom Princess. They sound like headlines from The Onion. I think you even mentioned that. But tell us about your Zach Galifianakian song titles. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing that right.
Yeah, I just meant like Zach Galifianakis, Galifianakian.
Galifianakian.
In that it's just... It might just be like a big splatter of a non sequitur. Like it might not, like David Byrne, it might not necessarily like make sense, but it's kind of off in right field. It kind of like punches you in the face a little bit.
Who is Zach?
Oh, Zach Galifianakis, the actor.
Oh,
the titles are, you know, kind of like an onion headline territory, you know.
All right. Well, tell me this. What is impressionistic Carter administration melodicism. Yeah. Melodicism.
Well, that last one was, I think, like a perfect example, because it could be, you know, some dance party in October of 1981. It could be right now. I like kind of the ambiguity of what we do. Like, you don't necessarily know what the date stamp is on anything. Or that we're drawing from, if it's a something that we're covering, but it's still instrumental or whatever. I like the being kind of out of time, or the timelessness, or just losing your sense of time through the music. So that's always kind of made sense to me. But it's kind of like, you know, kind of making fun of ourselves a little bit, but also paying respect to, you know, like the risks that we're taking with the improvisation and such.
Well, let's get to know your band members, and we'll start with bassist Mason Mamo Amonstall. Mason, tell us about how you became involved with music and the story behind the name Mamo.
Mamo. Mamo goes back to when I was a kid. My stepdad was Babo.
You're fine.
I'm not playing by the rules here. My mom was Mamo, and I became Mamo. I shunned it for a lot of years, and then my buddy Chico made me kind of wear it with pride, and that's where that came from.
Well, tell us your backstory. How did you become involved in music?
Sure. I've always loved music. My uncle is was one of the string bass players for the Eugene Symphony Orchestra, so I've always kind of gravitated towards bass. And I wanted to play trumpet when I went to middle school. Middle school in Colorado is when you could start playing instruments in the band. And so I wanted to play trumpet, and the band director says, well, we've got too many trumpet players. and so I went across the hall to Ms. Wino's class and picked up the upright bass.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that makes sense, because I can really see you're playing on an upright bass. In fact, a lot of your stuff sounds like it's upright bass.
Yeah.
So do you play other instruments, or now is it only bass?
I do. I play currently in a band called Sort in the Mail. I play acoustic guitar, lead guitar in that band, bluegrass band. And I play a little dobro, not much, but primarily it's bass and guitar.
And what other bands do you play with, or have you played in the past that we might know about?
Sure. I started playing in Madison with a group called Ghost Town Council. And that was many, many moons ago with my buddy Brian Knapp and Nate Penny and Tim Case. Tim Case is making some amazing music out in Eau Claire. Hopefully we can get him down here for this. And then played with them for several years and then took a break for a while. And then I started playing country tunes with my buddy Willie Jones, who's in Sort in the Mail with me. And we did like country crooners, Herlin Fuskey, and, you know, like all these old, you know, old country guys, Ray Price and stuff like that. And then I went and saw Phish for the first time in like 21 years. And I bought all these pedals and I bought a new electric bass. And I thought it was time for me to you know, kind of move in that direction a little bit.
And you're playing this very interesting purple Spectre guitar.
Yes.
With five strings.
Yes.
That looks like a special bass.
It's pretty great. I like it a lot. I do have a custom order coming in, and it's also a purple bass, and my family's just like, oh, yeah, I guess you're going to be the purple.
You're wearing a purple shirt.
I'm wearing a purple shirt.
You like purple a lot.
I like colors. I like purple, yeah.
Nice. Very good. Well, let's get back to live music here in the Lair, presented by the Aaron Weber Group. The next song you have for us, Graham, it's called Hamburglar Comes Out of Retirement. Hamburglar has always been my favorite McDonaldland character. Tell us about this song.
Yeah, that was I think the inspiration was like coming from a few different sources. One was just kind of doing a quick edit on what we had done for a rehearsal there, like, you know, tracking right to tape, and that's the title that kind of hit me. But we, at the time that we made that, there were a lot of memes out with this kind of like Hamburglar comes out of retirement, and was just, it was kind of like a meme where, kind of like in New York where they do like these public stunts and mass, like everyone stomps their right foot at the same time at the bus station and it freaks you out, or like that kind of thing. And we were seeing a lot of that, and it just kind of hit the imagistic note or whatever as that came out of us. But yeah, it kind of like this darker funk vibe, like he was kind of coming out of wherever, you know, he had been for, I don't know, like on unemployment, whatever. Nobody knows, but like,
no one knows. He probably wasn't in jail, probably.
And I think the other thing was on Mad TV, they had a thing called Clops, where they riffed on Cops, but it was all claymation. And it was like, you know, the planner's peanut got arrested.
Yeah.
Thrown to the ground.
California Raisin was a wino that got pulled over. I thought it was brilliant and hilarious, but. Yeah, that was another like secondary source, I guess.
Well, let's hear right now. This is Graham Marlowe, and Hamburglar Comes Out of Retirement. You're listening to Live in the Lair on Max Inc. Radio.
Lake Wave Trio on Max Inc. Radio's Live in the Lair, brought to you by the Aaron Weber Group, powered by First Weber. Learn more at movetomadison.com.
All right, we are back. That That was pretty amazing.
It was, wasn't it?
I could see the Hamburglar, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
I still don't know why he retired.
I still don't. I don't. And just the use to all the equipment is incredible.
I can't. Graham, will you ever sing? Will there ever be lyrics to your music?
It's something I would like to venture into a little bit, because oftentimes just like me in my car, you know, like a few dozen songs that I know I can hit the range of or whatever, but not really doing anything with. But
songs on the radio?
Well, yeah, but...
Or your own.
I've just always kind of worked on the more instrumental side of things over the years, dabbling in film scoring, extra tonality, whether it was like, you know, someone with a guzheng, like a 21-string harp tuned in all whole tones that was on campus that year, back in the day or something. You know, I was like, those kinds of like sonic experiments. But I'm sorry, what was the...
Well, will you ever sing? Oh, or will singing. You ever get a singer? Or
well, I think the only reason I haven't really exercised the muscle a whole lot over the years is like just living in apartment buildings and that over there, not having like a studio to work on that piece specifically.
Right. Mm.
Like after a few minutes, no matter how good you are, you'll start to hear wall punching. Yeah. Fine. So like that was kind of like the end of that project, I guess, in some ways. But I don't know. I guess my gifts were more instrumental. I was always around people that had such a range vocally and did it like so much better than I could picture myself doing, that I guess just kind of, you know, fulfilled that role more than others over the years as an instrumentalist.
Now, I saw you do wordless covers. What does that mean? I kind of know, but tell me about your wordless covers.
I was always really attracted to like how Miles Davis would like take a Prince song back in the late 80s, early 90s, and turn it inside out, or just kind of instrumentalizing a vocal song in a neat way, or like just rearranging it in a way where it was like, okay, now this is a cool instrumental experience. I think like for record labels and stuff, there was like a market for that was more traceable, but it is still there. And I think there's bands out there doing like only like instrumental rap covers and doing like Ohms, doing really well. Like they're not necessarily like full jazz players, but like they can do jazz type stuff, and it really kind of works. It just like sit on a groove like that. But as far as our particular group though, I don't know about like singing. I've been kind of flirting with that for a while, I guess.
Well, we'll be waiting for it. Or you might get a singer. Have you ever considered...
That's another thing I was going to mention, is like some vocalists have cycled through our social circle and stuff that have expressed interest. So I think it's just a matter of like finding a couple studio days and trying some stuff on that works, or just cycling through some ideas and landing on something. But I don't know that it would involve that much more than that. But then we have to think about like, you know, the live element. Is that going to be part of that or whatever, you know? So
I think it'd be fun.
I think I'm open to it. Yeah.
Well, let's give the drummer some. Will Bailey, you are also an audio engineer, a record producer. Tell us your backstory. How did you get involved in music?
Well, I've always been playing since fifth grade. Signed up for band class because I could do study hall or band class. And, they wanted me to play the big, huge bass drum, like the concert bass drum.
Oh, yeah.
And so I was totally into that. I can make a ruckus in school.
That's
like,
pounding.
I can, like... hit an object in school and be loud and like not be in trouble. Sign me up. So I did that. And you know, that was my musical foundation. I learned, you know, a lot from that. And then in high school I did a jazz band, and I played in like punk bands. That was my thing when I was in high school. Like, you know, really was into like playing as fast and as complicated as I possibly could. And then I kind of went the other way, and I was like, well, what if I don't do that? What if I learn like all the other styles of music? So I kind of went down the rabbit hole of like, how many different ways of drumming are there, and how many can I be proficient at? So I went kind of insane learning Latin music, African music, you know, all the stuff that interests me now. And it's been a great journey playing with a lot of people since then.
So did you find the bottom? How many are there?
No. So the thing about drumming is that it's a limitless journey. you can never find or play every drum beat. And everywhere you go in the world, everyone you meet that's a drummer will play differently. And every two drummers will play the same beat differently. You can write it down on a piece of paper and say, this is the drum beat, hand that to two different drummers. They'll interpret it and have a feel that's completely their own. And that's kind of amazing. I like that about it.
Well, that drives audio engineers and record producers crazy, doesn't it?
No, because as long as it's good, as long as it sounds good, it's good. That's the that's the record. That's the engineer kind of saying.
Now you went to MMI, which is kind of now defunct. Tell us about going to school there.
Yeah, that was great. So, my parents were potters, so I like grew up being a potter. I did pottery. And I loved that, but I was more interested in like the band that I was in, and so I like bought like a cheap interface to record our band, and like had a couple cheap mics, but I didn't know what I was doing, so I kind of tried to plug it in and I tried to get it to work, and I was thinking, this is way over my head. I don't know how to do any of this. So I looked into, you know, schools and stuff, and I said, okay, you know, I'm interested in this, I'm all in, let's go learn about it. And then I got an audio engineering degree, and then yeah, I learned from some great people there. It was a great school. It's sad that it's closed down now.
Madison Media Institute. Boy, a lot of people came out of there that are right here in the Madison music scene. I know that for sure. You said your parents were into pottery. But did you grow up with a potter's wheel at home and a kiln? Or?
Yeah. They had a shop in Lake Geneva, and they learned. They lived in like a pottery village in France before they moved to America, and they like learned from like pottery masters or whatever. So it's kind of insane. Like I grew up kind of working in the shop and kind of being an apprentice and like getting my pottery skills. I'm still also interested in that. I'm continuing to do it. Maybe I'll have a pottery website as well soon coming up. So get your music and your pottery 2-for-1.
Yeah, right.
Tell us something about pottery that, you know, we probably don't know.
Something you don't know about pottery?
Yeah, I mean, what's like the secret life of a pottery person? You like playing in mud?
It really has to cool down, Rata. You can't just take it and eat it right off. Really.
You told me about how the history of the humanity can be traced to pottery.
That's a cool story. So yeah. You kind of put me on the spot with that one, but no. I was telling Mason about how the study of like the movement of peoples and ancient civilizations and migrations of populations, the archaeological record can a lot of times only be found with the pottery that they left behind because there's not like DNA evidence left, or it's only bones, and like a lot of the stuff had been smashed or broken. But if the pottery is in like an enclosed space that's like not been messed with, it survives and it never kind of breaks down. Maybe that's something you don't know about pottery. It basically lasts forever. Like it's not gonna biodegrade, you know, or whatever. So that's kind of interesting.
It's the world's history book.
So yeah, right? You can get a 10,000-year-old piece of pottery and it can tell its story, even if it's broken. It has a story in it.
All right, well, let's get back to live music in the lair with Graham Marlowe's Lake Waves Trio, presented by the Aaron Weber Group. The next song you have for us tonight, it's called Sketches of a Bank Robbery and Getaway Drive. Tell us about this song before you play.
Yeah, this was the first one that Will and I had kind of tracked together as this group, more or less. And this was actually more of a duo. It just kind of... gave the semblance of there being a bass player in there, and then we just kind of ran with that, and it's worked since. So.
Well, let's get right to it, because I see it's 9:56 already. You're listening to Max Inc. Radio. This is Live in the Lair. We'll finish this night out. Sketches of a Bank Robbery and a Getaway Drive. Listen to Max Inc. After Hours and Indie 45 are coming up next.
Thank you.
Listening to Live in the Lair on Max Inc. Radio, brought to you by the Aaron Weber Group, powered by First Weber, on the Civic Media Radio Network.
There are so many traditions built around the Wisconsin Badgers, game day and the mascot, which in 1889 was a real badger. It didn't go well. Eventually, the animal was replaced by a person. An on-campus contest chose the official mascot name, Buckingham U. Badger. Still, Wisconsin's official animal is a badger. But do you know which animal almost earned this title instead? Gray squirrel? White-tailed deer? Black bear? The answer is coming up. The original badger's nickname is actually associated with lead miners in the state, not the animals. It was the 1820s, and the miners often didn't have shelter in the winters, so they lived like badgers, digging tunnels into the hillsides where they worked. So was there almost another state animal? Yes, the white-tailed deer, which later became the official wildlife animal. But the history surrounding the badgers is a true slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Shaw, WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.